are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name's Patricia Traina. I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places. Follow me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina, and you can find all my work, the links to all my work. You can ask questions for the Twitter mailbag, catch up with what's new with the Giants during this slow period of time, and you know, whatever else is on your mind, I'm there. So anyway, speaking of the slow period of time, we are filling in these last few weeks before the start of NFL training camps. The Giants opening up on July 24th, I believe. And what we're doing is we are having other Locked On podcast hosts come on the show and break down their teams that they cover. These are teams that the Giants will be facing in 2019. And on the line with me, he is a gentleman who, Giant fans, you will be familiar with him because I've had him on the show before. We've talked quarterbacks. He is the quarterback guru. He also is the host of Locked On Patriots. So he's still a good guy, folks. He's, you know, knows his stuff. He's Mark Scofield. Mark, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Pat. It's always a blast to be with you. And I think still a good guy is a great way to describe me because, you know, I come in peace. I do come in peace. And let's face it. Look, David Tyree and Manning to Manningham, okay? There's still some bitterness on this side of the table as well. But we're going to get through it today and have a fun chat.
Absolutely. And always a pleasure to have you on. And Mark, let's jump right in. We'll start off with the Patriots offense. We've got to start with Tom Brady. You know, no question he has etched his name as one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play in the NFL. But, he, you know, Brady always seems to find a way to reinvent himself every year. I know it's early, but what has he done that you think might be different in his game? Or is he going to pretty much be the same guy we've always seen?
I think he's, for the large part, going to be the same guy we've always seen. It's interesting. I just got done sort of doing a 2018 revisited series over my podcast. So I went back and broke down every game that they had last season. And, you know, I was doing things like going back and listening to my post-game shows and pulling audio from Boston radio. And there were some serious ebbs and flows to their year last year. They had the two-game losing streak weeks 2 and 3. They had the back-to-back losses to Miami and Pittsburgh. And then, you know, down the stretch, I mean, I remember, you know, when I looked back at my week 16 show when they beat the Bills like 24-12, I listened to my post-game recap, and you would have thought they lost. It sounded like a funeral. And one of my main concerns was the passing game. It looked like Brady wasn't comfortable. You know, there were a lot of rumors swirling around the Boston area that he was dealing with some sort of knee injury. And you could see it on film. He was protecting his lower body at times. He wasn't stepping into throws. And so this offense and this team basically did what they did so many times, which was, like you said, they sort of reinvent themselves. They became a team that was basically a 21 personnel I formation team that ran the ball a lot. They still threw it a lot, but they tried to rely on the ground game. And obviously we saw Super Bowl 53, you know, he didn't complete a ton of passes. They threw for 260, I think, with Julian Edelman catching 141 yards receiving. So they find ways to win. Now, I think you look at the acquisitions they've made at the running back spot over the past couple of seasons. They drafted Sony Michel in the first round. They added Damian Harris in the fourth round this year. So they seem to be adding up the running back spot. It does look like this organization does believe at some point they're really going to have to go all in on the ground game and take a lot off of the quarterback's shoulders, whether that's Brady or the Brady replacement. So it does seem like there's preparation for a transition, but I still think that as long as he's in the lineup, as long as he's in the huddle, they're going to be a team that wants to at least feature the passing game as a big part of what they do on the offensive side of the ball. As far as like his skill level, I haven't really seen a drop off, although interestingly enough, his ability to throw short to the left side of the field dipped last year. And there's a woman who was recently hired by the Ravens who did this fascinating project where she took completion percentages for all the quarterbacks and she averaged them out and she put them sort of in graphic format so you could see the areas of the field. And it was a really cool project that she did. And you could see for Tom Brady, where most quarterbacks, you know, you get up to like 15 yards down the left sideline and they're still completing a good number of passes. for Brady, it was basically the color blue, which was for incompletions from the line of scrimmage downfield. So that was something that I noticed going back to their game against Tennessee in week 10, which was a bad loss that they had right before their bye. And that continued throughout the season. So I think his traits have basically stayed the same over the past couple of seasons, but throwing to the left, whether it was because of an injury he was suffering or something else, did drop off last year. So that is something I'm going to watch.
Now, of course, he also lost Gronk this year. Gronk retired. How does the loss of Gronk kind of affect that passing game, and how do they make up for that?
It affects so much of what they do offensively on both the passing game and the running game. I mean, you look at that team in the playoffs, you look at the division around game, and at times in the Super Bowl, Gronk was a sixth offensive lineman for them. I mean, when he goes into Canton, it will be because of what he did as a receiver that people remember, but we probably will end up overlooking and, you know, underselling what he did as a blocker. He was a devastating blocker, both in the running game, and at times they kept him in pass protection, so they have to replace that. You know, they have to replace what he did as a receiver. And this was one of the more interesting storylines this offseason, because even before he announced his retirement, with the depth of this tight end class and the ability of the guys coming in like the Irv Smiths and the Noah Fant, T.J. Hockenson, there were expectations in and around New England, you know, particularly in the media, guys like me and others, that they were going to draft, if not one, maybe two tight ends. And Belichick, obviously, does his own thing. He zigs when everybody expects him to zag, and they don't draft a single one. And they tried to bring in guys like Austin Seferian Jenkins, and obviously that did not pan out immediately. He's already gone. They trade for Michael Roberts. He fails a physical. They bring in Benjamin Watson. They signed Matt Lacoste, who was an interesting role-type player for Denver. And so they've just gone in a completely different direction. But when you look at, say, the selection of N'Keal Harry in the first round, who one of the routes that he runs very well is the seam route, which we saw Gronkowski run three straight times in their one and only touchdown drive in Super Bowl 53, which was his final catch on a seam route. They're going to replace him in other ways. They're going to replace his production of the passing game through a variety of options, whether it's Harry, whether it's Lacoste, whether it's Benjamin Watson when he comes back from suspension. You might see them use a lot more 21 personnel than they did last year, even though they used it the second most in the league behind only San Francisco, and use James Devlin, who practices with the tight ends, even though he's a fullback. They might use him more. And so they're going to turn to a basically tight end by committee approach to try to replace what they lose in him. But let's not mince words here. When you look at Tom Brady's production over the years, there is a huge drop off when Gronkowski is not in the lineup as opposed to when he is. And so that's a big concern for many on the outside. How are they going to make up for Gronkowski and what he brought to the table? You know, the swirling story, Mike Freeman has been writing about this over Bleacher Report, the rumors that the organization expects him to be back. You could say that, look, given how they approach the tight end position and not drafting anybody and trying to replace it piecemeal, maybe there is some truth to that, but I would be hard-pressed. When you saw Gronkowski at the end of the season, you could tell that he was a shell of what he was. He was dealing with injuries, back injury had flared up, lower body injuries. He's young, but there's a lot of miles on that 29-year-old body. He's taken a lot of abuse over the years. I would be really surprised if he's even thinking about coming back.
Now, on the you mentioned offensive line and the effect that Gronk had on it. I want to turn to the interior of the offensive line. You know, there was a article by Pro Football Focus. I don't know if you saw it. They named the top guard tandems ahead of the 2019 season. And the Patriots, and you're going to have to correct me if I mispronounce these names here, Joe Thuney and Shaq Mason, they were ranked as the top rated interior offensive line duo in the NFL. What can you tell us about that group?
Yeah, Joe Thuney and Shaq Mason are studs. I mean, I would run out of adjectives. We would run out of time if I tried to really describe them. They're, you know, if you look at their entire offensive roster last year, there's only one player that played all 100% of their offensive snaps, and it was left guard Joe Thuney. He's an absolute rock star. Shaq Mason on the other side, their right guard, he's a force in the running game. They often run power with him pulling, and he's the lead blocker on a lot of their designs. When they go 21 personnel I formation power, you've got James Devlin and Shaq Mason sort of leading the way. That paved the road a lot of times for whether it was James White or Rex Burkhead or Sony Michel. And Joe Thuney, he's becoming a much better pass blocker. You know, there was a period of time maybe 2 years ago where he might have been the weak link up front, and those days are gone. You know, he's really worked on his craft as a pass blocker. These are two incredibly talented offensive guards. Now, they've locked up Shaq Mason long term. Now, the question in front of this offensive line right now, obviously, is the left guard of left tackle spot. But this is a contract year for Joe Tooney. And they drafted Hilde Frohol out of Arkansas, who, when I get a chance to study him on film, was a very good player. And you actually see him, you know, when Arkansas played Alabama, he handled himself very well against Quinton Williams, who obviously went very early in this draft. And Quinton Williams had one tackle for a loss an entire game that came when Frohol was on the sidelines. And so the Patriots, as they do year in and year out, they're looking to the future. If they don't sign Joe Tooney to a long-term extension, I think the plan would be to slide in Hilde Frohol next season. But these are two very – the interior of the Patriots offensive line, once you incorporate it into that mix as well, David Andrews, their center, is probably their strength on the offensive line. You know, they have question marks. Marcus Cannon has had some injuries at the right tackle spot. And now they've got to replace the left tackle yet again. Nate Solder is now a New York Giant, you know, so they traded for Trent Brown. They slid him in. Now he was one and done. He got a big deal from the Oakland Raiders. And the expectation is that Isaiah Wynn, who they drafted in the first round last year, is going to handle that left tackle spot. But Wynn was a rookie. He didn't see a single snap because he tore his Achilles in a preseason game. And so he's still technically a rookie. And behind him, Yodney Kajust, perhaps, who's also another rookie, or maybe Cole Crosston, who's a journeyman-type player. They've got question marks at the left tackle spot, but the interior of this offensive line is extremely solid, and it's led by those two guards, Joe Tooney and Shaq Mason.
And then finally on this offense, if you had to pick one or two things that really, you know, you're curious to see play out that you don't have the answers to just yet, or maybe things that are concerned, what do you think is the biggest, you know, thing that the Patriots on offense are going to have to overcome and address this summer?
Right. Well, I mean, I do think the left tackle spot is going to be an issue. You know, the days of, you know, the left tackle having to be like the blindside protector, the premier offensive lineman, those have kind of gone away. A lot of teams are taking good defensive ends and putting them opposite the right tackle. So you've got to have two good tackles. You know, it's not the premier position, but it's still extremely important, especially when you're talking about protecting a soon-to-be 42-year-old Tom Brady. So left tackle is an issue. Receiver is an issue. You know, N'Keal Harry, yes, he's a talented rookie wide receiver, but we've seen time and time again new wide receiver acquisitions struggle to sort of pick up the Patriots offense. And part of it is because the complexities to what they ask their wide receivers to do on a single given play. You look at their playbook, and from the terminology where in some offenses, take, for example, the New Orleans Saints, some of these, you know, pure Coryell or West Coast systems might have a numerical play route calling concept. So 585 tells the three receivers, as long as you know and line up in the right spot, you know you're running either a five route or an eight route. Well, that, and, you know, Patriots parlance might be something like Frisco. And it's a much more difficult learning curve for a number of players. And we've seen veteran players like, for example, Chad Ochocinco come in and struggle to pick it up. And so there's going to be a steep learning curve for Harry. And then you've got Dontrell Inman, Demaryius Thomas, guys that they've acquired in the offseason that you don't know what you're going to get from them. You don't know Thomas and his injury, how he's going to pan out. So the receiver spot's going to be a question mark. And the running back room, they've got a lot of guys that they've turned to in the past. They've always sort of used it sort of as a matchup basis, the running back spot, where one week it might be James White, the focus, another week it might be Rex Burkhead. But they seem to have perhaps their bell cow type guy in Sony Michel, but he's had the knee scoped again. I know the organization's optimistic about his recovery, and he seems to be ahead of schedule. But anytime you sort of back that up by drafting a guy in the fourth round, like they did with Damon Harris, you know, there's probably some underlying concern there. And so running back's a question mark, tight end's a question mark, left tackle's a question mark, the receiving room is a question mark. But, you know, as we talked about at the outset, you know, this is an organization that seems to find a way to get it done when it gets to be, you know, December and January. And so while there are question marks right now, you know, the underlying belief is that they'll figure it out come, you know, the crunch time of the season.
All right, Mark, we're going to take our first break, and when we come back, we're going to talk Patriots defense. Giant fans, stay with us. We'll be right back. The Locked On Giants podcast is brought to you in part by BlueChew.com. Visit BlueChew.com for more information and to take advantage of their special offer for Locked On Giants listeners. Enter the promo code Locked On at checkout to get your first shipment for only $5 shipping and handling. That's BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com. Welcome back to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina, and I have on the line with me Mark Schofield. You guys know him. You guys love him. He's the quarterback guru. But today he's talking Patriots, who are one of the teams that the Giants will face on their 2019 schedule. And as always, Mark is doing a fantastic job breaking down the Patriots. And we're going to look ahead now to the defense. And Mark, I think, you know, from what I've read, and you tell me if you disagree, but it sounds like the Patriots defense right now is the I guess the strength of the team, where there's maybe fewer question marks on that unit. Is that an accurate statement?
I think that's completely accurate. And if you think back to, say, conference championship weekend last year, you know, you obviously had, you had the Saints, the Rams, the Chiefs, and the Patriots, and there was a strong case to be made that the Patriots had the worst offense out of those four teams, but on the flip side, probably had the best defense left. And this was a defense that, you know, struggled at times, certainly in the beginning of the year, especially that 2-week stretch where they lost to, you know, Detroit and Jacksonville. I mean, talk about some strange results in the 2018-2019 season. But this defense, again, figured it out down the stretch. They did a lot of different things up front. They found ways to get pressure, whether it was moving Trey Flowers around, whether it was using some exotic fronts where they would sometimes turn to a radar front where they would take Trey Flowers, their best pass rushing defensive end, line them up over the center of the guard, and everybody else would be in a 2-point stance, and you don't know where teams are coming from. So, you know, they did things to figure it out. They played a lot of multiple safety packages. They were primarily a 3-safety team on almost all their snaps. You know, so there are less question marks. Yes, they lost Trey Flowers in free agency, but they bred in a Michael Bennett. They draft Chase Winovich in the third round. They're going to find ways to replace his production. They bring back Jamie Collins, an athletic defender at the linebacker spot that, you know, it didn't seem to click for him in his first go round, but he's older now. He's matured, so he's probably going to buy into the system a little bit more. You know, and they add him to a linebacking group that has Kyle Van Noy, Dont'a Hightower, who were fantastic last year. They had rookie Juwan Bentley last year, who before his injury seemed to be another good defender. And they loaded up again in the secondary. This is a secondary that was very good last year, and they seem to have made it a little bit better. They draft Jawan Williams in the second round, a player they were willing to draft in the first round. And so this defense has fewer question marks right now. But in this new era of offensive football, offenses are always figuring out new ways to do things, new ways to attack teams. And so there will probably be some struggles. They're going to play some good offenses this year again. And so you will see where this defense is come November, come December. But right now it does seem like this is the more consistent unit. This is the side of the ball that people seem more confident in right now, which, given the Patriots' history, seems a little odd, but this is where the franchise is right now.
Now, if I remember correctly, I think the Patriots were tied with the Giants for having one of the lowest sack totals last year, I think it was, but they had a high number of pressures. Have you seen the focus kind of move away from, you know, sacks, which are nice to have, but they're not the be-all, end-all? And, you know, have the Patriots, how do they basically get their pressure as far as, you know, are they, you know, do they have one specific way of doing it, or are they bringing pressure from all corners of that defense?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question, Pat. It's one of those sort of deep philosophical questions that you see sort of debated on the Twitter timeline and elsewhere. You know, one of them, you know, the do the running backs matter debate, which is something I'm not touching with a 10-foot pole right now. And there's also sort of the pass rush versus coverage debate, which we've seen play out sort of on PFF and elsewhere, which is more important. I remember I actually waded into that one slightly by pulling a Bill Belichick quote from like 2015, where he basically said they both matter. You know, they work in concert. You can have a great pass rush, but if you can't cover anybody, quarterbacks are still going to beat you. You can have incredible coverage, but if you can't get home, eventually somebody's going to break free in the secondary. So they need to work in concert. And so Belichick has always believed that they have to work together. Otherwise, you're not going to be successful as a defense. And now how they get pressure is mostly via scheme. They haven't had, you know, even Trey Flowers, who just got the 5-year, $92 million deal. He was probably their best sort of one-on-one pass rusher, but he wasn't dominant in any respect as a one-on-one pass rusher. So it came from scheme. I talked a few moments ago how they would sometimes, you look at their game against Minnesota last year, and Trey Flowers, a defensive end, was lined up as a nose guard in passing situations, and everybody else was in a two-point stance walking around. This was something they kind of stole from Tennessee after Tennessee used this against them and with great success. And this sort of radar front allowed them to get Trey Flowers matched up against a weak link on the offensive line, in this case the center, and get some success that way. They will use a lot of stunts. They will use a lot of blitzes from the defensive backs. I mentioned, you know, this is a many times a three safety team. They will run nickel and dime almost exclusively. And I expect to see even more of that next year. They ran a 3-2-6 package on 15% of their defensive snaps, and not just on third and long. They were doing it on second and goal from the 4 against the Chiefs because they believe that, you know, you have to sort of stop the pass in today's NFL. They like having the flexibility of athletic defenders. This is a defense. This is an organization that a couple of years ago, you know, had Kyle Arrington, a defensive back, lined up at defensive end at times. They will try to use athletes to get pass rush. And they will, with these 5 and 6 defensive back packages, blitz from the slot a ton. So they rely on scheme more than winning one-on-one matchups. And I expect to see more of that. You know, yes, they added Michael Bennett. Yes, they added Chase Winovich. But I expect to see them rely more on stunts, twists, different alignments, exotic formations, and scheme to get pressure rather than just relying on guys to win one-on-one matchups.
Now, historically, the Giants have played the Patriots tough. I mean, you know, they haven't always come out on top. They've come out on top when, I guess, it matters. But when you look at the matchups of the Giants offense versus the Patriots defense, and of course, everybody's going to be focused on Eli Manning, who, you know, found the magic formula to beat them in the Super Bowl. But when you look at the Giants personnel and going against this Patriots defense, no Odell Beckham Jr., you know, the Giants have an improved, hopefully, offensive line. Where do you see the key matchups being for each side of that offense versus defense?
Well, I think to try to get into Bill Belichick's head for a moment, which is always a scary thing to do because that's a scary man. Let's be honest. We can be honest. He's a strange person. I think he would approach this Giants defense with the concern that he pulled from his Giants days. You think back to his time in New York. He was, you know, coaching a team that had Mark Bavaro. And Belichick learned during those days that a tight end with the ability to do things in the passing game and as a blocker as well is perhaps the biggest thing that a defense has to contend with. It might be the toughest matchup for defenses to contend with. So I think he would look at Evan Engram as a guy that they would want to match up with and stop. And you would probably see a lot of Patrick Chung, provided he's back and healthy after the injury he had in the Super Bowl, matched up against Evan Engram. So that would be concern number one for Belichick. And concern number two is obviously going to be Saquon Barkley. You have to find a way to stop him both in the passing game and in the running game. I thought last year when the Giants, as the season wore on, used him as more of a downfield receiver at times, this was an offense that clicked in my mind. And so I think you're going to see more of that from Pat Schumer and company using Saquon Barkley as more of a downfield threat because he's such a talented receiver out of the backfield. And he's that matchup type piece where if you think about today's game and trying to get matchups, if you can get Saquon Barkley matched up against linebackers and safeties in the passing game, you're going to be successful. And so I think he's going to be concerned about that as well. So you might even see situations where Engram and Barkley get the lion's share of attention, and they're going to rely on, you know, the rest of their guys winning one-on-one matchups against Sterling Shepard, against Golden Tate. You know, if they're in 11 personnel against whether it's Cody Latimer or Corey Coleman. And so those are the two areas of focus, I think, for the Patriots when they play the Giants. Is can they make sure that they have good coverage on Evan Engram, and can they get good run fits up front for Saquon Barkley to try to bounce and get to the outside and then rally to the football? And can they also sort of use bracket coverages against him where you might see a linebacker on him but some dedicated even safety help over the top to protect against sort of big plays against him? Because if you look at what's given the Patriots fits, it's been running backs like Kareem Hunt over the years in some of those Chiefs game and others. You know, they sometimes struggle with running backs out of the backfield, so I'm sure that's going to be an area of focus for them.
You mentioned, just if I could for a moment with the Giants offense, just ask you this. You know, a lot has been made of the fact that Odell is no longer on that offense. From your perspective, does that change I mean, yes, he's a tremendous talent. Let's give credit where it's due. But in terms of, you know, the Giants offense, does it change much? You know, does it maybe open up more opportunities to, you know, to open that playbook, I guess, against defenses?
You know, I think it is sort of one more bit of evidence that this organization is going to move towards a more West Coast rooted passing attack. And you look at, for example, the acquisition of Golden Tate. He is one of your sort of, you know, almost stylistically perfect West Coast receivers, right? Very well versed in the short areas of the field, quick routes, slants, crossers, things like that. And that's basically the strength of Daniel Jones as a quarterback. That was what, you know, I thought was his best scheme fit, was a West Coast system. Now, historically speaking, that hasn't been the best for Eli Manning. His best successes come more when Todd Coughlin was in town and then more of an Air Coryell downfield passing attack. But if this is going to be the nod that they're moving to more of a West Coast system, you draft a quarterback to run that kind of system, and one of the big features of a West Coast passing attack is a true threat out of the backfield as a receiver, like we were just talking about with Saquon Barkley. You know, the pieces that they have in place are well suited for that. Whereas you think of Odell, and he's a multi-talented wide receiver. He's very scheme diverse. But one of his strengths, I think, was the downfield passing attack. It just, to me, indicates that this is truly going to be an offense moving in that more West Coast direction, partly because that's who you drafted in the first round in Daniel Jones. And you want to play to his strengths rather than force him to be something he's not. And that does seem to be the direction they're moving, at least to me.
Right. All right, a couple more about the Patriots, just getting back there, and I had to sneak that one in because
of course,
I figured, well, I have you on the line, you know, we could sit and talk, you know, X's and O's all day. Regarding the Patriots defense, if you had to pick one area that you feel is right now they're most vulnerable, which would it be?
I mean, I think every single Patriots who would still tell you that, yes, you know, Mark, you talk about how they get pressure on quarterbacks. Until they get their sack numbers up, Patriots fans will long believe that the lack of a true consistent pass rush is going to be an issue for them. Now, I don't go that far. I think, as you pointed out, you know, they had great pressure numbers last year, and pressure is productive. You know, when you force quarterbacks to speed up their process and make quicker decisions, you're impacting their process and you're going to have success as a defense. And so I think, you know, it's not the concern for me that it is for a lot of Patriots fans. You know, so where I put my biggest question mark is still that second level. You know, I think the secondary, it was great last year. I think it's going to be even better next year. You have Jawan Williams. You get Duke Dawson back, who I think they drafted him in the second round. I think he could be the slot corner they were looking for. The emergence of J.C. Jackson, you know, basically opposite Stephon Gilmore, was huge for them. And so I think this is going to be a very good secondary. It's still that second level. You know, and in today's NFL, when you see so much in terms of the RPO concept and trying to get second-level defenders into conflict, you need athleticism at that second level. And it does seem like it got a bit of a boost with Bentley. He seemed more athletic than people thought. Jamie Collins, definitely an athlete. Van Noy and Hightower are fantastic in the playoffs and in the Super Bowl. But, you know, it is still going to be a question mark. We saw how athletic teams like the Eagles in Super Bowl 52 were able to really expose them at times at that second level. That's still going to be a question mark for me. So I think if there is sort of a weakness, no, it might be that second level, but still, it's a group that fared so well down the stretch, number one. And number two, if they're relying on just two linebackers for most of the time, Hightower and Van Noy, and then you have, you know, five or six defensive backs behind them, that's a way to make up for that sort of lack of athleticism, as it were. And so they'll find ways to get it done. If there's probably a weakness on paper, for me, it's that linebacking group, but it's still a good group.
And then finally, Mark, this has been a question I think that has been debated for a number of years, and I'm kind of curious to get your take on it. There are some who believe that the reason why the Patriots have just been so dominating over the years is because the AFC East is just not a very good division with the Jets, the Bills, the Dolphins. Where do you stand on that whole debate? I mean, obviously, you know, you've got, when it push comes to shove, you know, the Patriots have won more Super Bowls, you know, and they're not necessarily facing the AFCs, but it's the path that they've taken there. So where do you kind of stand on that debate?
Yeah, I understand why people would feel this way. Look, we've seen some mismanagement. We've seen some on the field struggles from the other three AFC East teams. And, You know, they, you could make a case that they start most years probably with four, if not five, wins already, right? Because we expect them to, you know, sweep the Bills, maybe sweep the Jets or drop one on the road, at least beat the Dolphins at home. Miami on the road has been a house of horrors for them, and we saw it again last year with the Miracle Miami or whatever we're calling that debacle at the end of the game. But it does seem like they start the year with five wins, and I understand why people feel that way. At the same time, though, they've basically performed at the same rate against the rest of the NFL as they have against the AFC East. I mean, their winning percentage is basically 788 against teams in the AFC East since 2003, and outside the division, it's 786. I mean, they're basically performing at the same level, you know, and it's not like they're, you know, 9-7 each year and hosted a wild card weekend game and then, you know, having to go on the road to make it to a Super Bowl. I mean, they still take care of business outside the AFC East for the most part. You know, I think this was also sort of spurred on by what we saw this past playoff seasons where, yeah, they were 11-5 and hosting the 12-4 Chargers on divisional round weekend. And a lot of people felt the Chargers got a raw deal, and perhaps they did, having to come east back-to-back weeks, even though most years 12-4 gets you a division. They just ran up against the Chiefs last year. And so I think that, you know, brought this to the forefront again. But at the end of the day, look, you play who's in your division, you play who's on your schedule, and you got to go out there and you got to beat them. And the Patriots have done that. And they've done that basically to the same extent they've done that inside the AFC East as they have on the outside. So I get why people feel that way. Believe me, if I were, you know, an Eagles fan, or if I were a Chiefs fan or a Broncos fan, I'd probably be yelling about it too. But the numbers have kind of shown us that they handle their business inside the AFC East and they handle their business outside the AFC East.
And they keep winning. I mean, Belichick is, you know, they talk about the system. They talk about the talent that he brings in. He somehow seems to get it done year after year.
He does. But, you know, a fun little fact about Patriots fandom is people adore Belichick, the head coach. People pull their hair out over Belichick, the player personnel general manager guy. And this past offseason is yet another example of it, when we all spent on the outside, you know, studying tight ends. They're going to draft two tight ends, and he doesn't even draft a single one. And Patriots fans are just like, he's a great coach, but we don't understand the personnel decisions that he's making. You draft a running back in the first round last year. You draft another running back this year. What you draft, you trade up to draft a punter in this draft. I mean, I know what happened in the fifth round, but people were like, what are we doing out here? And so that's one of the strange dichotomies about, you know, Patriots Nation, whatever you want to call it, is we revere Belichick, the coach, but we still don't understand Belichick, the general manager.
It's interesting. And the debate will continue on whether or not, you know, coaches should be general managers, hold the dual right. But certainly Belichick, you know, given his success as a coach, I guess has earned that right.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, if a second year general manager for a team that has yet to make the playoffs trades up for a punter in the fifth round, they might add the temperature to their hot seat a little bit. But Belichick, because of his success, he has the ability and the freedom to make these kinds of decisions, because, you know, people might question and people might say, look, why would you do that? Look who's on the board, players X, Y, and Z. And he can just point to the name on his boat and say, look, my boat is now, what, 8-9 rings? That's the name of it now. So, I mean, I think I know what I'm doing, right? And so he's got that leeway now where he can make these decisions. And, you know, with the Nick Cassero rumors, and it seems like whether he wants out or not, you know, he might be making decisions for a lot longer.
Sure sounds that way. He's a fascinating man. You know, I'm working on a book about Giants history, and he's one of the chapters, and just, you know, some of his former players, the detail that Belichick addresses is just, it's amazing. It'll just absolutely blow your mind. And I'm sure you've seen it in your coverage of the Patriots, but just little details that you wouldn't even think of a ball coach would worry about. And he just, yep, he worries about it. It's just hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I always think, you know, one of Madden's books, I forget which one knee equals 2 feet, or the one of his books when he was talking about coach. And I remember he went into detail about how football players are creatures of habit. And if you're, say, traveling to a road game and you find out that there's going to be a 10-minute delay to a flight, you better tell them. Because if you don't, and they start milling around at the gate for like 10 minutes or on the plane for 10 minutes, they're going to start like getting agitated. And so you have to worry about these things like down to the minute. And Belichick isn't that same vein where, you know, all these little things add up over the course of a season. And you might not think in August that you have to practice the kick return after a safety play, but Belichick will spend a lot of time on it just on the off chance it happens once over the course of the upcoming season, because those situational moments can sometimes make the difference between a win and a loss. And so all those little things, all those little details, travel arrangements, things like that, he's thinking about all of that stuff.
You have to, I guess. And hey, look, it works for him. That's why the man's got multiple rings, and that's why the man has got a probably going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer when he eventually calls it a career.
Yep. So, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, these things add up. They've worked over the years, and you could point to situations throughout some of their Super Bowl runs where this freak play comes up and they know exactly what to do because they've covered it at some point, whether it was during a training camp or otherwise. So they're always prepared. They're always ready. And it starts with the head coach.
It sure does. Mark, thanks so much for coming on. Let everybody know what you got coming up on Locked On Patriots and your other work that you're doing.
Oh, thanks so much, Pat. It's always a pleasure to be with you. I love your show. You do such great work covering the Giants. As for me, over at Locked On Patriots, we're in phase two of our offseason program. We did 2018 Revisited. Now we are doing Patriots A to Z, doing two letters a day, A through Z. I'm talking about some of the players, the people, the plays, and the moments that have made this franchise what it is over the years. So that's what we're doing over the next couple of weeks. And you can look out for the Pro Football Weekly Bears Preview Magazine. I'm going to be in that with a piece on Mitchell Trubisky, what Bears fans can expect from him in year three. That will hit bookstores like Barnes & Noble and Amazon in the next couple of weeks.
And, of course, you're over on Big Blue View, the Giants site, doing your thing, as always, on the quarterbacks.
Yeah, working on a piece right now. We're doing a summer school series over at Big Blue View. I'm doing a whole series on evaluating the quarterback position so everybody out there listening can someday take my job, which now that I think about it, probably wasn't the smartest thing to do, but I guess we'll do it. Working on a piece right now on pocket presence and pocket poise, which is a huge part of playing the position. So you can look for that probably in the next couple of days.
And it's definitely must-read material. All your stuff is must-read. Mark, I so appreciate you coming on. Great stuff. And like I said, we could talk football all day. I mean, it's just that enjoyable.
Yeah, it's always enjoyable for me coming on. I love being on the show. Every time you reach out, I'm excited to come on and talk with you. So it's just always a blast, and thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. Giant fans, thank you for listening. We'll have more opponent previews. We have Arizona coming up. We have Eagles coming up. Lots more coming up on the Locked On Giants podcast. On behalf of Mark Schofield, thank you for tuning in, and we'll talk soon.